Hi, I'm Allison.
And I'm Larissa. We're two working moms
and real-life friends
on the journey to improving our family's health.
We're digging through the facts and fads around living a cleaner, greener lifestyle
with plenty of cocktails.
Whether you've taken the plunge like Larissa
or just a little crunchy curious like Allison, this podcast's for you.
Welcome to the Crunchy Cocktail Hour.
Happy Friday, guys. This is Larissa, and as always, I'm here with Allison.
Hi, everyone.
So today we're going to be talking all about healthy pregnancy. We'll touch on food, we'll touch on pregnancy trends, and, you know, even kind of places people give birth, whether it's hospital birth or otherwise. But before we get into the topic, Allison has a little announcement.
I do. I am expecting baby number 2 in September.
Yay!
Yeah, so we figured that this would be a good way to get into it, but I am due in September with another baby girl. So far, I'm feeling pretty good, and I actually had a feeling it was a girl before we knew because the pregnancy feels so similar to Claire in almost every way, shape, or form. I'm one of those weird people that really enjoys being pregnant. So I'm having a lot of fun and looking forward to meeting her.
Congrats. Yeah,
thank you.
Guys, I've been drinking alone for weeks.
She has. Every time we go to clink glasses, it's a little embarrassing because I'm clinking my water glass. But we actually thought it would be a good opportunity to do a new drink series.
Mocktails.
So we'll be doing mocktails for me and then how you can make it, you can jazz it up with some Prosecco or a liqueur or liquor to make it a little bit more interesting for your friends that, you know, don't really want to not be drinking with you.
I want to keep drinking.
And I would too. No judgment. But that way you can have a couple of ideas for things, ways to make mocktails a little bit more exciting than, you know, just drinking water.
Love it. And so tell me about our cocktail mocktail today.
So this is actually something I drink pretty regularly if, you know, if we got friends over or family over. And I like to call it a pineapple fizz. And essentially it's pineapple juice, a little bit of additional citrus, so lemon or lime or whatever I have around, and then club soda. And you put it in a Prosecco glass and a champagne flute. And it's delicious. And then if you do have people over that want to drink, you just do Prosecco instead of the club soda.
Love it.
Cheers.
Cheers.
So we want to share our sponsor before we begin today, Prep Dish. Prep Dish is a healthy meal planning service where every week you get an email with a grocery list and prep ahead instructions, so all of your meals are ready for the week. It really takes the guesswork out of what's for dinner.
Yeah, this is my favorite type of meal plan approach. My personal biggest struggle is figuring out what to make and having enough variety. But I like to be able to buy my own foods. I like someone giving me all the ideas and the grocery list to go with it. But I want to be able to choose whether I buy organic or not. I want to swap out veggies that I know my family doesn't like. Or maybe something, you know, one type of fish is on sale at the store, or a different type of meat is on sale at the store, and I want to swap out the protein or remove the protein, quite frankly.
And I think as Claire gets older, this will be one that will work out well with allergies because,
absolutely,
you know, I can kind of put in there and what sort of those allergies are or swap things out as appropriate. It makes it so much easier.
Absolutely. It makes it really customizable while still kind of giving you that main idea and recipe. And I personally like being able to take a couple of hours on the weekend and prep everything that I need because it saves me hours in the kitchen during the week.
When you need that time the most.
Yeah, absolutely.
So each week you get three things, a grocery list, a prep day list, and a dish day list. And really it takes about 2 hours of prep, but it's really in exchange for 5 to 20 minutes of cook time each night. And really during the week is when I want that time back.
Absolutely.
I love doing that prep on the weekend and feeling like I've got my stuff together during the week.
Yeah. And there is a vegan broccoli soup that I've got my eye on that I'm dying to try. My kids love broccoli, and so I'm hoping they'll take it in soup form.
I bet they will. I mean, that one just sounds so good. There's a pumpkin seed crusted chicken. I've never seen anything like this, but I love pumpkin seeds, and I love sort of like that crispness on chicken. So I think that one's going to be amazing. So Prep Dish is giving our listeners a 2-week free trial. You just need to visit prepdish.com/crunchy. That's prepdish.com/CRUNCHY to try Prep Dish for 2 weeks and find out why we are so obsessed. So just a quick disclaimer before we begin, because pregnancy is one of those things that's just incredibly personal and incredibly specific to everybody that goes through it. Every woman, every pregnancy is different, and there really is no one size fits all. So what might work for us might not work for you, and what, you know, our experience may can be completely different than yours. So take everything we say again with a grain of salt. This is absolutely not meant to be judgmental. We're going to be talking about eating and about weight gain, and that can be something that can be incredibly personal. So just know there's no judgment. If you gained 15 pounds or you gained 60, all that matters is that you felt good and you did what felt right for you and your baby. And if you lost all your weight, great. If you're still carrying your weight to your kids' kindergarten graduation, you do you. No judgment. No judgment zone.
For sure.
Well, to launch us in, one of the biggest things that everybody talks about is, what do I eat when I'm pregnant? How much should I eat? And how much weight should I gain? And, you know, I think when we were looking into this, they say that the average pregnant woman only needs to eat about 300 more calories a day, which is nothing.
Yeah.
That's so little. And it's 300 more calories than the daily recommended calorie intake. So you think about what we're probably all eating. We're probably all eating a little bit more than our calorie intake.
Absolutely.
Anyway. So really, net new calories is next to nothing. But the biggest thing to note is that you are absolutely not eating for two. And I think it's really tempting to say, I'm pregnant. I can kind of let loose and go crazy. But the thing I always kind of came back to is, whatever I put on, I'm going to want to take off. And it's going to take a lot more time to put it or take it off than put it on.
For sure. Wait, but didn't someone tell you recently how many calories they thought you should be eating?
Yes.
So what was it?
I was away on an outing, like a trip with my mom. And the woman noticed that I was pregnant. And she was like, oh, you can have dessert and like a couple different entrees, and was going crazy. And she was like, you need to eat about 5,000 calories a day while you're pregnant. And I was like, who told you this? And then after that, she said, and I think it's double when you're nursing.
What?
She was like, I don't even know if that's humanly possible to eat that much.
Wow.
That's a lot of calories.
That's a lot of license to.
Yeah.
I don't. Yeah. Like, can you imagine actually trying to eat that much?
Oh, it would take effort.
Yeah.
You'd feel sick all of the time.
For sure.
Well, and there's some women that, especially in early pregnancy, start to think a lot about putting on weight if they feel like they aren't. Especially if you have morning sickness or if you're throwing up a lot, it can be really hard to actually keep that weight on. But I think overall, it's just not putting a lot of pressure on yourself one way
or
another, and just feeling comfortable and sticking to a healthy diet.
For
That's
sure.
kind of the biggest part of it.
I know when I was pregnant, I had that like idea of like, I'm going to eat all these things that I want and it's going to be so great. And then I didn't want any of those things.
No.
And it's funny, this was, you know, 4+ years ago, but, you know, sometimes you get like a whiff of something and then just changes your mm-hmm. taste on it. So like when I was pregnant, I was so excited for all these things and I almost completely stopped eating meat.
Yes,
I wanted was like raw everything. And I literally had a 2 watermelon a week habit by myself.
That's so funny because that's my big craving too.
I've heard that a lot from people because mm-hmm. it's refreshing, it's hydrating, and you know, I don't drink water. So
I hope you did when you were pregnant.
I mean, watermelon, 2 watermelons a week.
I mean, that's still a lot of water.
There you go.
But you know, I felt the same way. I had a lot of aversion to meat right off the bat.
Yeah.
And then just wanted to like chomp on carrots and celery and things that like had that satisfying crunch. But the biggest thing you can do is just whatever you consider a healthy diet, which is typically lean meats, healthy vegetables, fruits, making sure that that makes up a big portion of your diet, and then like treating yourself every once in a while. So I don't eat a lot of carbs normally. So when I'm pregnant, I'll let myself kind of eat more sandwiches. Or
what are you eating right now?
We may have treated ourselves to some sticky buns before the podcast mm-hmm. began.
Mine is untouched. Allison's is gone.
I see a raisin. There's a raisin left. Yeah, so treat yourself. Definitely let yourself indulge.
This is not me shaming a pregnant woman about her sticky bun.
No judgment zone from everybody but Larissa. The one other thing I'd say is to incorporate foods that are really rich in some of the nutrients that you need in pregnancy. So, and typically in life as women anyway, but iron is a big one, omega-3 fatty acids, calcium, that lean protein like we talked about, and then folate. And you can really get this from your diet. Prenatals are fabulous and definitely something you should take, but you can include a lot of these foods that will just sort of boost that in your diet anyway.
Absolutely.
So stick to things like those leafy green vegetables. You could use the liver that Larissa's really famous
for. Uh-huh.
What's the liver and beer? Maybe just the liver. What's the event you have with your father-in-law?
Oh, it's just over the holidays. We have chicken livers wrapped in bacon.
Oh my God, that does sound good.
It's so good.
That didn't sound good to me last time we talked about it, and now it sounds good.
Let me tell you something, sidebar. He asked me before this past holiday, you know, because I wasn't really eating meat. He said, are we doing chicken livers wrapped in bacon? And I said, totally. We can't break that tradition. And then he didn't get it.
How dare he?
And it broke my heart.
So you still need them. We should have that for our next podcast.
We should.
All right.
I'm holding. Blend that up into a cocktail.
That doesn't sound good. But like I said, from a food perspective, it's really just making sure that you don't go crazy. Don't go bananas, because you'll regret it later, in my opinion. You'll feel sick when you eat too much or you eat too sugary. And there's always the risk of gestational diabetes, which is typically something that you can't really avoid. But there is ways that you can, you can lessen your risk if it's something that runs in your family. And that's really avoiding that processed sugar, getting your sugars from fruits and other sort of natural, healthy routes, and making sure that you don't just load up on candy bars like I did yesterday or sticky buns like I am right now, but making sure that you balance that with the healthy stuff.
I will also say, though, and I feel like this is slightly counterintuitive to everything that you're saying, which is spot on, but this is also a time to give your body what it wants. You know, your body often will, like, when you truly have cravings, you know, very different than, ooh, I'm really wanting some Mexican food. Like, sometimes your body truly craves what it needs. Mm-hmm. And so if there's something that you really want, you know, as long as it is healthy for you, and I don't mean like don't eat a junk food, but, you know, as long as it's not, detrimental to your pregnancy in any way, you know, give your body what it wants, mm-hmm. like let it, because that those cravings when you're pregnant, especially, I feel like they just do not go away and you crazy.
And they're so nagging. It's one of those things that you need that right now.
Absolutely.
And one of the things actually that I've been craving a lot in this pregnancy is dairy.
Interesting.
Which I remember we had talked about me sort of not reintroducing dairy.
Yeah.
No way, shape or form. Well, I've been pregnant. It's the thing I want the most. And typically it's just like, I'll just want a piece of cheese or I'll want a glass of milk. And I'm not a huge dairy eater and didn't eat dairy for almost over a year. But it's something that my body wants. So maybe I need that extra.
So how do you balance that? Do you just give your body what it wants when it wants that? Or do you try to balance it in some way?
Yeah, I don't succumb to every craving. I'll try to sort of just keep myself satiated. However, and I also find that oftentimes when I'm craving something that perhaps I don't want to eat, I will just try to drink more water.
Sure.
Because typically I'm more thirsty than anything else. And my body's just trying to compensate. So, you know, just drinking as much water as possible is really helpful. And you should drink water when you're pregnant, Larissa.
I probably did.
I hope so.
I don't know.
Once again, Max and Melina turned out okay.
Yeah, they're okay. Just drink watermelon.
Like, oh, you're thirsty? Here, have a watermelon.
I mean, that's literally what happened.
Now or when you were pregnant?
No, now I just don't drink water.
But the kids do.
Yeah.
Now that wasn't going to a very good thing.
No. They drink water. I'm just like, I'm thinking back to the days of being pregnant and like forcing myself to drink water. And then I remember one of my friends like looking at me and being like, one of my friends who is a like water drinking machine, and I'm nursing twins. And she's like, you don't drink any water. How do you make any milk? I'm like, I don't know.
Were you drinking beer? Because that helps.
Sometimes.
Yeah. A good yeasty beer.
Yeah.
Kicks up that milk supply.
There you go.
Fine. So kind of like a taboo pregnancy topic. Like people don't want to talk about it and don't want to mention it, but weight gain.
Yeah.
It's something that's on your mind just constantly. And especially if you feel like you're gaining too much or if you feel like you're not gaining enough, which there are people on both sides of that.
And it changes literally, I feel like, every year what they say is or isn't healthy. And based on if, you know, if you have a single pregnancy or multiples, it just, I feel like it at least changes in some way every year.
And or doctors will change how they absolutely respond to the advice. So right now, so we'll go to sort of go through these and I'll link them for you. But both the Institute for Medicine and the CDC recommend that if you're underweight, it's about 20 to 40 pounds for twins, 50 to 62. A normal weight, 25 to 35, twins, 37 to 54. And if you're overweight, about 15 to 25 pounds and 31 to 50 pounds for twins. So what I find interesting about this is those are the U.S. guidelines.
Okay.
And in almost every other country, they're very different.
Okay.
So specifically in Europe, it's recommended that you gain 1 kilogram per month, which works out to about 20 pounds for the entire pregnancy. And what's really interesting about that is that they're very strict about it. So rather than it being sort of this wide range, it's this very small number, which is lower than the underweight recommended number. And it's something that is talked about consistently. It's something that you're sort of held to. And in some countries, there can be a lot of pressure around that weight. But interesting to me that it's so different.
I wonder if any of that has to do with the overall weight of our population, right? Because I don't at all have the statistics in front of me, but a large percentage of the population in the U.S. is overweight. The way that we eat food is in larger quantities than mm-hmm. I feel like overseas. And so it's just, I wonder if there is some balance that they're accommodating for what we're used to.
I wonder, but then you'd think they'd kind of flip-flop that we would have lower recommendations.
Yeah.
Because our bodies wouldn't need
you're right.
more.
You're right.
And I think what's interesting, so in another example is actually Japan. It's only 15 to 26 pounds recommended weight loss or weight gain. But I think what I'm finding so interesting is that the expectations around that weight gain in different countries are so much different. So in the States, there's a recommended weight gain, which is a huge range. And most people are over the range.
Yeah.
I would say on average, the average pregnant woman goes over.
Was there anything that you came through in your research about the type of prenatal care women get, I guess, from the health system versus here? Because here I think about it, you know, you get pregnant, you see your doctor regularly, but things around your food and your exercise and things like that are all up to you. Yeah. And I don't know that it to be different anywhere else, but I wonder if
there's more support
other places, there's more support mm-hmm. and more oversight and more help and more education.
That's really interesting. I didn't find anything specific to that in the research that I did in discussion. So with actually my cousin who's expecting as well, it sounds like there is just a little bit more structure to maternal care.
And you're talking about in Canada.
In Canada. Sorry about that. A little bit more structure. So I don't know if that support would extend from a nutritional perspective or if that would sort of come into the realm of how you live your life, the
yeah.
you know, how physical you are, the food you eat, those types of things. So I don't know, that'd be interesting. Maybe I can do some digging there.
I would just be curious because it's difficult, I think, especially, you know, if you are someone where exercise and things like that and eating well are a part of your life pre-pregnancy, then it's very likely that that'll continue for you because you're educated on it and you know the benefits of and all of that. But if you're not someone who that's part of their daily life, it's pretty unlikely that it's all of a sudden going to become part of your life. And so, especially without that support, like, I'm curious what that's like in other places.
Well, and there really is this sort of culture of fattening pregnant women up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, so you, double the calories.
Double the calories. And, you know, you constantly hear, well, you're allowed, you're eating for two. And why don't you take an extra helping of this? And it's all done in love and wanting to be supportive. But I think it's just a different culture around the expectations of what a woman's body is supposed to do during pregnancy.
Yeah. It's really interesting.
So personal question for you, and we can edit this out if you don't want me to answer this. How much did you gain with the twins? And did you feel comfortable with it?
Yeah. So I was around like 37, 38 pounds, I think I gained with the twins, which I think is like pretty on average for a twin pregnancy. And but I will tell you, my mother told me that she gained 80 pounds with me.
Oh, my goodness.
And so she was like, when I got, she was like, get ready. You're going to get a lot of weight. And my mom is not an overweight person. My mom is roughly my size. Like, you know, we have fairly good genes, like, and we eat fairly well. And so, but she was like, just you alone, 80 pounds. And she was like, get ready.
How big of a, were you a 25 pounder?
I wasn't. I think I was an average size baby, but it just goes to show you, I think too, you know, and she had me in another country and I don't know what she was eating then or, you know, if she was exercising or not. But I always found that to be a fun fact because I was like, oh, no.
That's so funny. You were prepared for this like massive weight gain.
I was prepared for a lot of weight gain. But I think, you know, I also think that some of the reasons why my weight gain was kind of in the normal range was because I did crave those things that were just innately healthier. And it was just a lot of fruits and vegetables. And there wasn't like a ton of carbs. There wasn't a ton of sweets. And it's just not what my body wanted. Had my body wanted that, I don't know what my weight gain would have been like. And so it was a little bit, yes, personal choice about what I was putting in my body, but it was a little bit too of what my body was craving.
Because like we said, those cravings are intense
when you feel them.
No, that's interesting. And funnily enough, my mom, when she was pregnant both times, was about 110 pounds at 9 months. Like she's just like teeny tiny with both pregnancies. Yeah. So I was like, well, that'll be me too. No, it wasn't. I think I gained 25 pounds with Claire, which I felt pretty good about. But you know, it's one of those things where no matter what, as women, when we're putting on weight, it feels weird.
Yeah. You feel self-conscious.
You feel self-conscious because, you know, you're putting it on your belly, but you're also putting it on other places and you just feel odd about it. But funny story about Larissa. She showed me pictures of her when she was pregnant with the twins. And you guys have all seen her. She's very thin. She just had this torpedo belly.
Torpedo.
Coming off of her body. This tiny frame and then just torpedo.
It was
with two babies in there.
So funny to scare people when I would be out places and I didn't necessarily look pregnant from the back and I would turn around and people would like recoil. Whoa.
That's a lot of babies.
You know, back to one of your points too, you know, especially with the twin pregnancy, it's not like I'm wearing a sign when I'm walking around that says twin pregnancy. And, you know, I definitely had looks when people would say, like, how far along are you? And, you know, I didn't say like immediately, oh, it's twins. Right. And I would say how far along I am. And I look like I'm, you know, 17 months past that. You know, it does. It makes you self-conscious. Like even with strangers, you know, when people say things like seemingly really innocent things, like you look like you're ready to go or like, you know, it all feeds into that thing about us as women and our bodies and what we should gain or what we shouldn't gain, what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat. And it's a really, I don't know, it's a tough place to be. And sometimes you do fight between what your body wants and what you know you should do. And sometimes you're in a situation where Maybe you are used to exercising or you're not used to exercising. It doesn't even matter, but your pregnancy doesn't allow you to do it, right? Yeah. Sometimes people are just not allowed to exercise for whatever the situation might be. So there's just so many, different scenarios of that. And it's sometimes hard to know what's wrong and right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're feeling good in your pregnancy and you have a baby at the end of it, and, you know, it's, you did everything that you could do, do you.
Totally.
Go enjoy that sticky bun.
Is this you making me feel better? You making you feel better about yourself?
Maybe me feel better about myself. That's all right.
I'll eventually eat my sticky bun too. Well, I promise.
We'll see where I end up at the end of this one. I might surpass my Claire if I keep having these sticky bun cravings.
It's such a girl superstition too, mm-hmm. to be craving sweets.
But I'm craving the bad sweets a lot more than I did with Claire.
What's a good sweet? Just like fruit?
Watermelon and fruit. Much fresh fruit with Claire. And I'm trying to swap that out. And so when I'm really wanting ice cream or a chocolate bar at the end of the day, like having fruit instead. So we just keep fresh fruit in the house.
You should look into I've seen a ton of really easy recipes for just making ice cream out of. I know you can't have banana, but like a fruit, like a strawberry or whatever it is.
Yeah, I could do that. I just need the fruit really has been helping to curb the cravings. And like I said, just drinking enough cold water.
Yeah.
For some reason, it's cold water that I really crave. So that's helping. We will see.
No good promises. Luck to you.
No promises that I will be tiny at all. So the other thing I want to talk about is different types of birth. By this, I mean where you can actually give birth. So there's obviously the hospital is kind of our more traditional setting, or actually, we're going back in time. Home birth is probably our most traditional.
Well,
birth centers, and then of course the home birth. And there's really pros and cons to each, and it's figuring out what makes the most sense for you, both from a cost perspective and what you're comfortable with, what you need from a pain management perspective. But the thing I'll say is that, you know, I listed it under each of these, but if you have in any way a complicated or high risk pregnancy, it really takes the option out of it, which a lot of women can struggle with. Twins, for example, you probably didn't have a ton of options.
Well, it wasn't ever a consideration for me, I guess. I never asked the question. Mm. For me, it was the first time I was giving birth, I didn't know anything about it. And for me, I felt safest and most comfortable in a hospital environment. I had a doctor who was very pro having a vaginal birth if my first baby was down, heads down. So, you know, the goal and I guess the plan was always to try to have a delivery versus a C-section delivery. And so I guess I could have asked that question of whether a home birth was possible or a birth center birth was possible, but in my mind, it wasn't an option for me, so I never asked the question.
That's fair. But, I think for women that have any kind of a risk in their pregnancy, so sometimes age can be considered a high-risk pregnancy, anything really that would prevent you from being able to be in anywhere other than a hospital setting kind of takes the option out of it. But if you do have a low-risk, non-complicated pregnancy, you can kind of make decisions that make sense for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the one that both of us went with is a hospital setting. For me, the pros there were the immediate access to medical care. It was my first pregnancy. I didn't really know what to expect. And I liked the idea of having a NICU available and, you know, an access to emergency C-section should something happen. Some other pros of a hospital setting is the ability to select pain relief in the moment. And that was another selling point for me. I went in kind of not knowing whether or not I wanted to have a quote unquote natural birth or if I wanted to have pain relief. And so I wanted to be able to have that option where I believe in both birth centers and a home birth, you just don't have that option at your disposal. You're heading into a natural birth. Another pro for me was that it's at least a 24-hour stay, and we'll talk about that in a birth center. some people, this might not be a pro, but I liked the idea of having medical staff and nurses there to help me figure out what the heck I was doing
and yeah.
make sure everything was okay before we left. We actually ended up being there for 4 days, I think, because Clara ended up being jaundiced. But I liked having that little bit of extra security.
Yeah, it's interesting because so we actually got an extra day in the hospital because my son was born right after midnight. So technically I gave birth on the next day, which gave me another day, which was really nice. But yeah, I mean, similar to you, I didn't know what I was going to do in terms of pain management and I wanted the option. I also, you know, from talking to friends that had already given birth, I was very prepared and planned to use the nurses at my disposal and take advantage of that. For example, you know, I wanted to try to nurse my kids, but I also wanted that help to help me, like, for them to be able to take the kids to the nursery every once in a while so I could sleep and get some rest. Because once I was going to get home, that's it. There was no rest. Yeah. So that was a big one for me. You know, they would bring the kids to me to nurse, but they would take them so that we could sleep and they would bring them on whatever intervals we landed on. But yeah, and of course, the you know, I delivered at a hospital that had a level 3 NICU. I didn't know, you know, what my labor was going to be like. Mm-hmm. With twins, there's the possibility of a vaginal birth. There's the possibility of C-section. There's the possibility of one each.
Yeah.
And so I not knowing what to expect, wanted, I guess, the safest environment for me.
Yeah.
That I felt was the safest.
And where you felt the most comfortable.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people choose the other options is personal comfort.
Absolutely.
You're not comfortable.
Yeah. And it's an absolutely fair thing.
So for Claire, I did deliver. Kyle, you know, he was there to support, but he didn't do anything. So we did deliver in a hospital and plan on doing the same for this baby. And a big part of it was, you know, we did have that extra support when she was needed that intervention right after the bat. And she also ended up needing to have support through the birth process just because of her heart rate dropping. And so we had NICU on staff in the room when she was born, which having that gave me that just that extra little bit of peace of mind. I liked having that comfort. I'll also say the support of the nurse staff in a hospital, being a nurse in a labor delivery ward has to be one of the most difficult jobs and takes a really special person. And they're unbelievable. They're unbelievable human beings. And so I felt like I did have incredible support, incredible coaching, and incredible people around me in a hospital setting. So,
and let's be real, the nurses do all the work.
Oh, they do everything.
They do it all.
I look down every once in a while, and the doctor is sometimes there. The nurse was always there.
Yeah,
right by my head.
I like this is so not the same, but I always equate it to the teachers make the school, and I always feel like the nurses make the birth experience, right?
And not to, OBGYNs are amazing, not to belittle what they do either.
I love my doctor, but the nurses are doing the work.
The nurses are just, they provide that support. We'll get to this later, but doulas is a big trend and it's something you're considering for this. So we'll touch on
that.
So some of the reasons people might not be interested in a hospital birth, one is people tend to be uncomfortable in hospitals. They can tend to consider it a place for sick people, which is, you know, not exactly wrong. You know, it's got that kind of sterile environment, or at least a stigma of having a sterile environment. I'll say to that one, I think a lot of hospitals that have true labor and delivery units are making great efforts to make them have more of that home-like feel, hiding medical equipment behind curtains and furniture and things like that, and more private suites. So where I delivered, I felt incredibly comfortable, but I can understand the feeling of a hospital.
Yeah. So I'll tell you from my experience. So because I was having twins, no matter what, I had to deliver in the OR, just in the case that, you know, one baby had to come out in section, or you know, anything went wrong. And there was staff from the NICU there to check the babies right away. And it was very sterile. And you're surrounded by so many people, which you wouldn't be in a normal mm-hmm. labor room. But,
the
you know,
of people is always shocking.
Yeah. And on one hand, it's not like pleasant, and it's a little bit scary, quite frankly, because it's so metal and sterile. But on the other hand, that was, you know, I don't think scared is right, but I just didn't know. And so for me, it was a comfort to be there. The other thing too is, so when I gave birth at the hospital, they were in the process of creating a new wing where everybody would get to have their own rooms. Mm-hmm. But at that time it was, you know, if it turned out that you could have your own room, they would give it to you. But if not, you normally would bunk with somebody else. But they were so sweet to me. And because I had two babies, they actually like remade up a labor and delivery room for me, which, you know, is a larger room. And they kind of put the softer pad on the bed and like did all that and allowed us to stay in there for the duration of my stay. So it was, they made it as comfortable as it could be. And again, for my own kind of comfort and not knowing what to expect, it was just the right place for me.
Yeah, me too. It's definitely why I plan on doing it again. But one of the big cons is often cost.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So a hospital birth is expensive. And if you don't have insurance, or if you have some kind of, or if you have insurance that maybe is not great, you're going to be footing up some of that bill, and it can be a lot to stomach, or not possible. So sometimes these other options can be slightly more affordable, especially a home birth. So it's definitely something to take into account.
So question for you, one of the things that my doctor's office did, and it was probably one of my, I don't know, first couple of appointments, that I came in for, is they do like a financial appointment with you, and they literally give you on a piece of paper that says it's going to cost you exactly this many dollars based on your insurance, and that's going to include your doctor's visits here, it's going to include your birth at the hospital, they give you an all-in number, and you sign that, so you know what to expect, because the bills come in like in pieces, right? Because there's the hospital bill and the doctor's bill and the whatever nursery bill. I'm just making stuff up, but
it's true. You get each doctor that was in the room,
and it's hard to add up, right? But one thing that I thought they did really well is they gave me that number up front. I knew exactly what it was going to be. Whether I liked that number or not is a very different story. Mm-hmm. But they made it really transparent. Was that something that you had?
I don't remember that.
Okay,
and not to say that it didn't happen. I don't believe it did. That would be helpful. Because
I wonder if it's something that you can ask for. Yeah,
because it is hard when you start getting those bills and you say you're being charged for this doctor, this is their name, and you don't remember that person at all. So each person that was in the delivery room, we got a separate bill for.
Absolutely.
And I maybe met them all. I don't remember.
They probably met you.
They certainly did. They saw them. My business end for sure. But yeah, I mean, the cost is considerable, and it is something that unfortunately many people need to take into account when considering where to give birth. So definite con on the hospital side for that one. So while we don't have experience or personal experience from birth centers and home birth, we did a little bit of research, and I think it's helpful to understand sort of what that could look like. So with birth centers, it is a fully licensed healthcare facility, and the people that work there are medical professionals, often midwives, who are trained in delivering babies. That's what they do. This is a center exclusively for babies and bringing them into the world. One of the reasons that women tend to gravitate towards birth centers is that it tends to be a home-like environment. That's what they're aiming for. And they're entirely set up for a natural approach to labor and delivery. So anything you're seeing from a trend perspective, water births, any kind of pain management that's natural, they'll be set up to be able to facilitate that. And the folks that work there are trained on those natural pain management techniques. So I think more and more people are gravitating towards birthing centers. You have a couple of friends that.
Yeah, for sure. And I know, like, one thing that I've always found really interesting and appealing about the process is that, you know, in a hospital setting, you know, once you kind of get going or once you've had drugs, you have to lay down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, gravity doesn't really help you in that way. In terms of when you're starting to push. But, you know, in these environments, you can kind of do whatever your body wants to do. You can bounce on a ball, or you can squat, or you can walk, or, you know, you can do whatever's comfortable for you. And I find that part of it really appealing, mm-hmm. because, you know, when you're in pain and you're kind of relegated to your bed, that can be very, very difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. So some of the sort of drawbacks to a birth center approach is that mommies and babies are typically discharged mere hours after delivery, which to some women, that sounds great. Get me home, get me out of a medical setting. That sounds a little scary to me.
There were things happening to me hours after I've given birth where I was like, get a nurse in here. What is happening?
Yes.
And I would have been totally frightened if I was at home.
Yeah. And even with the baby, I feel like there's a lot of things to monitor and check up on. But I was also being monitored and checked up on because I was in a hospital setting. So that's my personal fear of a birth center. But a lot of people love that about it. So yeah, could be your route if that sounds appealing. One other drawback is the need to transfer to a hospital should issues arise. So birth centers are, I'm saying typically here, not set up for pain management. So if you do decide that you'd like to go that route, you'd need to be transferred. If something happens where you need to move into emergency C-section, you'd need to be transferred to a hospital setting. And again, that's a if you had that route. Insurance acceptance at birth centers do vary. So while it is cheaper than a hospital birth, again, typically, not all insurance will cover a birth center birth because of some of those things that we just talked about, the need to transfer should there be any kind of issues that arise. And sometimes they choose not to accept insurance, some birth centers. So something to consider if you would like to have insurance cover your birth. And then the one that kind of was interesting to me is that you need to bring your own supplies.
Yep, you bring everything for your bed. Yeah.
So that's kind of a one and done type of purchase there. You need sheets and towels and all of the things that you'd need to be comfortable throughout your
delivery. I mean, the reality is you end up paying for that at a hospital.
You
so
do.
It's just a matter of them giving you a checklist and you getting it yourself. So, I mean, it's one less thing you have to do at a hospital, but you still pay for it either way.
It's true. And then you can use your own detergent.
That's true.
There's a pro there. So that's a birth center. Definitely something to consider if you're heading into pregnancy and you have a non-complicated birth. There's beautiful centers, and they're typically in every major metropolitan. I'm sure you could look them up. And then just see if your insurance will cover it and if that's something that seems appealing.
The friends that I have that have delivered at birth centers, some have gone through with the delivery at the birth center and some have had to go to the hospital. But either way, they have all talked about kind of the quality of the care, how they felt really looked after and comfortable. And, you know, even when it didn't work out in their favor to deliver there, they still wouldn't have done it any other way. So, you know, because then they still spent some majority of time there in an environment that was most comfortable for them. So I think it's just kind of to each his own.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And like I said, wonderful things I've heard about birth centers. So the last one we absolutely have no experience with, either of us, is a home birth. And these are becoming increasingly popular. And I think one of the major reasons why is the cost. So typically in a home birth, you would still have a midwife or a doula, somebody with medical and birthing training there to help you. And that's somebody that you'd have to seek out on your own. You interview those folks typically and find somebody that works for you. And then once you are in labor, they will come join you at your home. Something I think people like a lot about this is control. The control over your own environment.
Yeah.
The ability to be in a space that's comfortable. And it's your space. So you feel just that extra little bit of ownership over the situation.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I equate this to, it's very similar, I feel like, to the birth center experience, because at the end of the day, you're going to have someone who is equally as trained, but just within your home. And so it's just a matter of, would you like to do it in your environment?
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely see why this would be wonderful, especially as a person that can be a bit of a control freak, you know, being in a space that you...
There's no like, oh, I have to rush to the hospital. No. I'm here.
I'm already here. You wake up and you just go for it. So I definitely see the appeal there. But one of the big drawbacks that I read about that would be a huge drawback for me is the mess.
Oh, yeah.
So you think about, you know, a lot of things happen during delivery. And that's in
home. Look up an old Netflix documentary of Ricky Lake giving birth.
I don't
in her home.
I'm not looking that up.
That you terrible. Should look it up.
Oh, yeah. Right now. Just freak me out.
Yeah.
But you're responsible for all of that cleanup. So you need to have the supplies. You need to be responsible for that cleanup. And maybe that's something that would be fine with you. But I think about needing to do that afterwards, and it just sounds a little daunting to me.
The one thing too that and I don't have any personal friends who have done a home birth, but one thing that I know is a draw for some people is that their other kids can be part of the experience.
Oh, neat.
So whether it's a water birth or just a birth in a bed, a lot of times, like if they have, you know, an older child, and it doesn't have to be like, I'm not saying like 14 years old or whatever. It could be like even as old as 5 years old or 4 years old. They want them to experience some part of it or to see the baby right away or like those types of things that really wouldn't normally be allowed in a hospital setting, or, and I'm not sure if it would be in a birth center setting or not, but it really allows other people in the family to be part of that experience. And there's nobody telling you, you know, you can't have your mom and your aunt and your brother and your sister and your kids. Like, you can have anybody that you want all around you. And I think that's part of the experience for some people.
Yeah, I could see that, especially with the kids, because I know they don't allow children
not at all
near labor and delivery. So that's definitely a big one. A few more quick drawbacks about home birth is the need, if you need access to emergency intervention for whatever reason, your proximity to that hospital is your limitation there, and your ability to get access to an emergency vehicle. You know, that's why this is really meant for low risk pregnancies, non-complicated births, because if you are in a situation where there's an expectation or a major concern about there being some kind of complication, you really need to be
for sure
near emergency care. Yeah. And again, the inability to select pain relief in the moment. So if you change your mind, you're like, well, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. You are in it to win it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I think, I wonder what the statistics are for how many people choose a home birth for their first round versus a second. Like, once you know what to expect, is it a lot easier to kind of gravitate towards a more natural option when you know how it works?
Yeah, it's interesting because that definitely is not the case for me. I'm hoping to continue to have the same birthing experience. But there are certain things I changed, like the ability to have a doula.
Okay. So tell me about that. Because you haven't told me about that before.
Yeah. So with Claire, we ended up doing the suction with helping her out of the birth canal. And part of it was that her heart rate was dropping. And in that moment, and when you sort of hear that, you kind of just do whatever is necessary. I had no idea what that meant, what the complications would be. Not that we wouldn't have gone that route, but it was just sort of a, okay, let's quickly get the baby out. And it's like, oh, I'm up here. I've got some questions. And so I like the idea of having a parent advocate and somebody that can help be that conduit for conversation between the medical staff and myself. And one of the main benefits of a doula is they can also be postnatal doulas that help you when you come home. So I see a lot of value in that. They're trained professionals. They have to be certified. But they're just advocates for the mom, which I really like.
I like that.
So we're considering it something, but actually that's a good segue into the next section here, which is crunchy birth and pregnancy trends.
Love it.
So doulas is a big one. Yeah. They're becoming increasingly popular. And I think more and more people are choosing to go into that field. Because it is a medical field. I think the training obviously is not as intense as going into medical school. But they're able to work closely with mothers, work closely with babies in a really holistic way. So I think it's becoming more of a trend. Do you know anybody that's used a doula?
I don't think so. But it makes so much sense to me, right? Like, you know, in your example, you're talking about like having questions, right? But all those people in the room with you are doing something, right? And mm-hmm. So this is somebody that's kind of like near you that knows what's going on and knows, you know, the ins and outs of this process that can kind of like answer those things for mm-hmm. you while other people are busy doing other things. So it makes perfect sense.
And their sole focus is your comfort.
Yeah. And I know, you know, a lot of people have. My birth plan was like, get them out was my birth plan. But I know some people, at least, you know, have in their minds what they'd like it to be. It doesn't always work out that way, but sometimes it does. And so I think, you know, a doula is a great way to kind of steer those in the room that are like taking you through the process back towards your plan or confer with you when you say they're about to do this and this is off your mm-hmm. birth plan. Do you still want to do that? So. It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. So I'll let you know.
Okay.
What we had there.
I mean, I'm not having any more kids, but.
If you did.
I'm not.
So a couple of other things. So starting at the conception side of things, acupuncture for conception is becoming a big trend. A lot of people are having issues as they go into conception. And I think that the struggle is, We spend our whole lives trying not to get pregnant, and then we try to get pregnant, and it's like, come on, bodies, can we figure this out?
Right.
And so people are turning to holistic ways to try to get their bodies, you know, with the program. And one of the big ones is acupuncture. And the full idea is that it increases fertility by reducing stress, increasing blood flow to the reproductive organs, and balancing the endocrine system. Conceive Claire, it took us, I want to say like 7 months. And at some point in that 7 months, somebody had recommended acupuncture to me. And I was very nervous about this.
I can't see you doing acupuncture.
I did it. And
like once, right?
I did it once.
Okay.
So I went to community acupuncture in my area. And it was a wonderful, wonderful place, very calming. It was definitely a very meditative type space. And, you know, they were very familiar with acupuncture for conception. And so let them know that's sort of what I was doing. They talked me through the process. They laid me down. I got the needles in. And the moment he walked out of the room, I was like, I hate this.
Really?
How much longer is this going to be? And the whole time, because you're supposed to sit there and feel really calm and, like I said, meditative. I couldn't get there. It was not for me. The whole time, I was just like, there's a needle. I have an itch and I can't move because I have needles there.
I
and it was just not for me.
Love acupuncture.
Do you get it regularly?
I don't get it regularly because it is often not covered by insurance. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, it's like they put the last needle in and it knocks me out and I have the best nap of my life.
Oh.
But like I can't like pay $75 per nap.
No. that's an expensive nap.
But I had done it in the past for stress and I find it to be amazing. Because yeah. For me, it's just, I feel like I need that. I need to be in a situation where I can't move and I have to relax and it forces me to do that. But like, there is something about it that lulls me to sleep. Oh, I mean, talk about meditative state. Just, I straight fall asleep. Mm-hmm. And then when they come back in, I'm like, no.
You're like, just let me lie here.
I just want to stay here.
I wish I had. I literally, I was counting down the minutes. I hated it. And so...
Do you think it's because you thought you would hate it?
I wouldn't have gone.
You were going and like really giving it a shot.
Because people swear by this. People are saying that they have been having trouble conceiving for a long, long time. And then they try this and wham, bam, they're pregnant the next day. And so I was like, you know, that sounds great. I could use a little stress relief. Let's, you know, if nothing else, I'll relax a little bit.
So you gave you stress?
And I left there so stressed. I would go get a massage a million times and never do acupuncture again.
Oh, man.
Well, but don't let me be a naysayer. I've heard wonderful things and people are saying this works for them.
Yeah. And if you want to pay for my acupuncture, that's fine too.
No.
I'll take your appointment.
So on the same kind of track here is natural family planning. And I think we talked about this in an earlier episode. When people are more and more are tracking cycles and ovulation to manage fertility. So really understanding when they ovulate, when would be the best chance of conception. And this isn't new. People have been using this as a birth control method for a long, long time, successful or not. But this is something that's been around. But now it's getting techie. People are wearing great wearables. So there's the one that's the most popular is the Ava bracelet. It's, you know, every Instagram celebrity is hawking this product. But I also have some friends that have used it and love it.
Really? Okay.
Because you just wear it at night and it tracks your basal body temperature, your sleep cycle, heart rate. A couple of other
whatever
things.
Data points you need,
anything
right?
You need. Yeah, and it really gets to narrow down specific times that go for it. Yeah, your chance. And people are having a lot of luck with it.
That's fantastic. It's well, cool because method. it's one of those things. I don't know if you felt this way, but I think nobody really tells you that it's like. You think, again, like you said, you spent all your life trying not to get pregnant. Yep. And then you're like, all right, okay, I'm ready to do it now. And
you have no idea how it works.
You have no idea. I mean, legitimately, you don't know how it works or that the percentage is so small, even when you do it at the perfectly right time. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so cool that you have things like that because you know, 5-6 years ago, right? People were probably doing all these things just on calendars and thermometers and all this kind of stuff. So to have this kind of handy thing that does it all for you when everything is so busy as it is so cool.
I know. I this is one that I think probably after this baby, I'll even just use to
understand.
Does it
track your steps?
I know, because you only wear it at night. Unless you're taking weird sleepwalking steps.
I mean, I might.
And I like this one, so I think I'd give this one a try. So this next one, I'm very curious to know if you tried.
Okay.
Placenta encapsulation.
I didn't try it.
Okay.
I didn't really know about it.
Really?
But I would have.
Oh, interesting.
Totally, totally would have. And I had two placentas to work with.
All of that extra
I would have still capsules. Been taking capsules.
Give them to the kids.
But I definitely have friends who do this. I don't know. I don't think that there is true studied evidence behind it, but I think there's something to it.
Agreed. And so some of the benefits that it supposedly offers is helping to prevent postpartum depression, which is huge. Reducing pain and postpartum bleeding, so helping you get over the trauma of giving birth. And increasing breast milk production, which I found interesting, and actually increasing infant mother bonding.
Hmm.
That's what people, the proponents claim to be the benefits. And it's apparently super easy to do. You find a company that does encapsulation, you go ahead, you ship it off and
I think you can, but the ones, my friends who have done it, they literally come to the hospital and pick it up and then they send you your pills or you pick them up if it's someone that's local.
Oh, that's neat.
So, you know, it's because they want to pick, this sounds weird, but they want to pick it up when it's fresh.
Yeah.
But I'm sure the places, like if you don't have someone that's local, they'll pick it up, that the hospital will help you care for it in a way that's, you know, will maintain its freshness. I don't know what other word to use for it.
I think that's the right word. It just sounds so bizarre.
I know,
in this
it's
context.
Bizarre. But I mean, like if you think about, you know, some of like where this came from. I mean, like in some cultures, they like have the family over and fry that thing up and everybody has some.
Yeah.
and to me, there's nothing super, I don't know, gross about it. It's dried up. It's put into a capsule. It's not like you're, you know, eating it like a piece of liver. Sorry about that. But just wrap it in bacon and have it for the holidays.
God. If you did that, please send us a note.
But had I like known more, or like had this have been in my, I don't know, in my line of, I don't know. I don't know what
if
I'm trying to say.
If you'd known what it was.
I know what it was.
Yeah. No, it's, I definitely think it's, I think the supposed benefits seem huge. So, you know, it's an interesting one.
Are you doing it?
Is that something I'm going to do?
Are you doing it?
Probably not.
Why?
I don't think I can get there. It definitely isn't, because somebody told me that they did. If you had told me that you had done it, I would just say, oh, interesting. Like, what did you think?
Yeah.
I don't think it's gross.
I did it. I liked to do it.
I don't think it's gross. I just don't think it's for me.
All right, fair.
Yeah. Well, the next one that I read about, our crunchy trend, is, first let me describe sort of why it came about. But every time somebody finds out you're pregnant, especially for the first time, what's the first thing they do?
They touch your belly?
No. Well, that's it. They tell you their horror story.
Oh, yes.
Everyone does. And it's not ill intent. It's sort of, you know, you hear about something and it just sort of triggers all these memories for you. And so they want to tell you their experience. But what it does is it adds to your fear. And so there tends to be this pretty considerable fear around giving birth and around the associated pain and the experience and what could go wrong and that lack of control. And so hypnobirthing was born, for lack of a better term. And hypnobirthing is all around helping to alleviate the fear and therefore the pain associated with pregnancy or with delivery. And it really is what you think. It's that getting to that meditative state, that deep breathing, mantras, the sounds associated with it, that meditation, and helping even with your partner, or you can get a hypnobirthing coach who can help get you to that deep relaxation state. It seems really cool.
Yeah, I've heard of one. I think it's called like maybe Hypno Baby or something like that I know a couple of people have used and have really liked.
Really?
So I can try to find out what it is. We could link it for everybody. But and I've heard some good things about it.
Okay, good. Because it seems like it really is that fear of pain that I think really gets in people's way. So it seems to make sense. There's a company that sort of created this whole concept, and they provide coaches and training for coaches. So we can link to that as well. But if you have one that's local, I'd be interested in hearing about
it. No, not local. I think it's just like a company of, I don't know if they have like, I don't know if it's these or videos or what, but I just know several people that have used it.
Okay, an interesting one. I just feel like it's similar to meditation and yoga and relaxation.
It's a mind over matter thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what birth is.
Totally. Because, oh, it's rough.
It is. We know it's going to be great. This is going to be so great.
It is. Because you get a tiny little human at the end of it.
It's true.
So worth it. But
it's worth it. So it's not great. It's worth it.
Okay, fair.
The next one I heard a lot about, actually, right before I had Claire, and I don't think I felt like I was armed with enough information, but it's delayed cord clamping. And recently, the World Health Organization put out a recommendation that you delay cord clamping. I believe they said up to like 25 seconds to 5 minutes after giving birth. And the whole idea there is the blood that's in the cord would then enter the baby. And it provides a couple of benefits. So that blood transfer could increase their blood volume. It could reduce risks of iron deficiency or anemia. But they're saying that there's all these benefits around delayed cord clamping. Did you know of this?
I didn't know about it at all. So I don't know if I would have done it. I haven't done enough research, but it's interesting.
I thought so too, but there are some risks associated with it. I would say from what I've read, the risks are not particularly proven. So,
okay.
While the benefits are well documented, I would say the risks are less so. So one of the risks is a polycythemia, and I'm not sure I'm saying that right, but essentially an excess of red blood cells, which can cause a couple of health risks for the baby immediately, not sort of long-term effects. hyperbilirubinemia, if I'm saying that right. And that's actually what Claire had. So it causes jaundice.
Okay.
And then respiratory distress. I'd say this is increasing in popularity because, number one, World Health Organization puts out some recommendation and there will be some response to it. I think specifically in some of the more natural birth settings, they can sometimes go a little bit above the recommended time. And that's, I think, where we're seeing a little bit more risk, but that's also where they're not in a hospital setting. But I'd say in general, this is becoming an increasing trend because the benefits are great and the risks are not particularly proven.
So is this something that you're considering with baby number two?
And this is, me and my doctor are going to be talking about this. I actually think more often this is happening without mothers even being aware of it.
Okay.
Because you think about it. Did you know when the cords were clamped?
No.
You don't. Blur. You just aren't aware.
Blur.
So I think this is happening. And I think that's my question to my doctor. Is this something you guys do anyway? What is the duration of time? And talking through some of these risks, if they are something that happen, they're not inconsiderable. These are real issues that you could potentially have. And so I'd want to understand the level of risk. But I think this is definitely something we'd do. On the other side of the coin is cord blood blank. Cord blood blanking. Cord blood banking. Is this something you did?
It's not something we did, but it is something that we considered. Yeah. And ultimately, the cost is what drove us not to do it.
Yes.
Because it is so very expensive.
So expensive. So one of the reasons that you do this is that cord blood has stem cells that are obviously perfect for your baby. Actually gathering that cord blood has absolutely no risk to the mother or the baby. And then if something happens later in life where those stem cells could be used for your baby, if there's any kind of an infection, an illness that something could be used, you can access those stem cells and use it for your baby. And those stem cells are supposed to be lower risk than bone marrow stem cells, and the process for bone marrow is incredible. So there's definitely an advantage. The main disadvantage is cost.
Yeah. I mean, it is a ridiculous amount of money to do it and then to store it long term. And I can't remember, I'll be honest, if this exists or it just exists in small quantities, but public banking, because I think it exists. I think it's just our hospital was not a part of it, but I am a big believer in public banking, which is if everyone donates into a kind of a public kitty, right? And then it is, I don't know, government funded, quite frankly, or state funded. I don't know how that would work. But if something like that is needed, there's just this pool to pull from, very similar to blood, right? Yeah. Because it would allow people who need it to potentially have a match. And it's just, I don't know. I wonder what the costs of that would look like in a centralized way versus an individual cost. And I hope we'll get there.
Yeah. I've never heard of the public banking, but that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And actually touches on some of the disadvantages of the private cord blood banking.
It's not a word for
you. I'll get it once. There's a limited cell dose per baby. So it's just this small amount that doesn't yield a lot. So you're not, it's potential that you wouldn't have enough to do what you needed to do later in life anyway. And there's limited use of an infant's own umbilical cord blood for themselves later in life anyway. The application is limited. The ability to use it for that specific case is limited. From my perspective, we won't be doing this. And the main reason is I think that the disadvantages outweigh the advantages from our perspective. But I hadn't looked into public cord blood banking.
Just don't say it anymore.
You guys know what I'm trying to say. but I haven't looked into that. So maybe we could find something.
Yeah. You know what? It's been so long since I looked into it. And so I don't remember. I think it exists. I just think it wasn't accessible to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because it would need to be, it would need to be something that the hospital could do in order to, you know, extract it and store it and everything else. And that's why normally you enlist a private organization to come do all that for you. So,
We'll look into it and see what we can find. So the last one I actually found really interesting, and the way I heard about this was actually connecting with one of our crunchier girlfriends about what she had done when she was pregnant. And she mentioned skipping the glucose test.
Yeah.
And a big reason that that women do this is Glucola, if I think I'm saying that correctly, which is the horrible drink that they make you have before your test, has some less than great ingredients in it. But mostly it's a huge, huge, huge amount of artificial sugar.
Probably so much.
More than you'd have in a week or a month normally, especially if you're somebody that lives a healthier lifestyle. So women are opting not to do it.
So your friend that you talked to, did she do an alternative process?
Did, yes. Okay. So some women are choosing to do at-home glucose tests, testing urine. There's some efficacy concerns there, but
right.
Understanding whether or not those tests are actually applicable. But what she did is created a smoothie that had just a huge amount of natural sugars in it and a way larger quantity than this tiny little glucola that you had, and had to chug it in a very small period of time. Hmm. But it yielded the same amount of sugar in a natural way.
So I guess, was that something that she arranged with the hospital or doctor to do, and they were comfortable with the approach?
Mm-hmm. She had done the research on her own. So I'll reach out to her and get actually the recipe that she used.
Fantastic.
But did the research on her own, had the conversation with the doctor, proposed that, because the doctor was not very pleased with her willingness
to
forgo the glucose test, which you'll find a lot. And then made that for herself and used that as her alternative, and the test worked quite well.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool.
So something to consider. I don't know if I'd want to consume that amount of anything in such a short period of time. The advantage of the glucola is I think it's 4 ounces.
Yeah. The good thing is I believe they at least now have it dye-free.
It is, yeah.
So it's like there's a little bit of a improvement, but it's still the same.
And actually, I don't think they're all dye-free.
They are all dye-free?
I don't think they are.
No, they're not all dye-free. Yeah. I mean, the one that I drank was a bright orange. Ew.
And it's not like the taste. Everybody always complains about the taste. I didn't think the taste was that bad, but it is just so much sugar.
It's so much sugar. And like, do yourself a favor and drink it cold, because drinking that stuff warm is just gross.
But most places keep it cold now.
Yeah.
I think they've learned that lesson the hard way. So that's really all I have from a healthy pregnancy perspective. And I was really excited to share the news with all of you. I'm so, so excited about this little one. And like I said, I love being pregnant. So enjoy our mocktail series, and we'll keep you updated.
Say cord blood banking again.
Cord blood banking.
Very good.
Yay.
So we have a ton of stuff to link for you guys in our show notes, crunchycocktailhour.com. What was our fizz called?
It is a pineapple fizz.
Pineapple fizz will be on silverlinedandwine.com. Give us a follow on social media. We're at Crunchy Cocktail Hour everywhere. And subscribe if you like what you hear. And please leave us a review. We would so appreciate it. We'll see you next Friday.
Bye, everyone.